Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
You flunk in math proudly.
You could forget about being an electrician because you can't even pass 10th grade math.
Math? How am I supposed to know that?
I hate math.
What about math?
No, not important.
Well, that's a montage of scenes from movies and television shows put together by YouTuber Dan Meyer about Hollywood's representation of math. And it gets to the way that many students and adults feel about math, that they aren't good at it, can't do it, and really, really dislike it. But there's a movement in some math classrooms in Massachusetts to get students more excited about math. It's an effort to change what they call math mindset. WBUR launched a series about this just today, and that series is called Solving Our Math Problem. And senior reporter for WBUR's Edify, Tanya Mosley, joins us with more. Hello, Tanya.
Hello, Meghna.
Okay, so tell me about the central idea here. Changing math mindset can change math performance?
Yes. So I wanted to start off by giving an example of the WBUR newsroom, or really any newsroom that I've been a part of.
Okay.
I want to say that. So it's almost a badge of honor to say you're not good at math when you're dealing with writers and those who speak for a living.
Not me.
I know. You're excluded. Like you're like a precious diamond. You are very rare. But it's really like a badge of honor, this idea that maybe you were born with this innate ability to write well and to speak well, but that you were also born with this inability to do math. Well, Stanford professors Carol DeWick and Joe Bowler would say that we have a fixed mindset about our math abilities. And Professor Bowler has found that more people have a fixed mindset about math than any other subject.
Hmm.
A growth mindset, however, is the belief that you can excel at anything you put your effort into, and that includes math.
Okay, so an important distinction there. Tell me more about the difference between growth and fixed mindsets.
Okay, so someone with a growth mindset is more adept to taking on challenges, welcoming feedback, putting in effort, persisting, and focusing on improvement. A fixed mindset generally is associated with being defensive, avoiding difficult challenges, and giving up essentially when it's hard.
Okay. Now, are there data to show that students do better in math class when they have this growth mindset rather than that fixed mindset?
Bowler has done her own data. She's done small samples of students that have shown a measurable improvement over time. So she does this summer camp where she for 6th and 7th graders, and they use different approaches to teaching the students math, which is very important, and also teach them the idea of growth mindset. And what she's found is that after this camp, these students improved their test scores on standardized tests by 50%.
50%?
50% in this small sample. But there's another researcher, John Hattie, who has written about the science of how we learn, and he argues that we have not seen a large-scale measurable shift in student outcomes based on the growth mindset model. And this reason is very interesting because the adults that are teaching the kids have a fixed mindset. So they approach teaching these students accordingly.
I see. So the example that perhaps adults are inadvertently setting is part of this equation. I was going to say, pardon the pun.
I know, right? And so this brings us back to why this idea is very popular for teachers across the nation and here in Massachusetts. So I met with Stanford professor Joe Bowler at a teaching conference in Billerica back in January, and there were more than 300 teachers in this room. And she says that teachers are excited by the idea that they now have the power to shift outcomes in math.
A lot of teachers have wanted to believe that kids could achieve, but have been held back by the ideas that have been around for so long that some kids are smart and some kids aren't. And when they get the new brain science that really shows that anybody can be as smart as they want, that's really liberating for them, I think.
The new brain science. Okay, so what is this neuroscience that Bowler's talking about?
So there are three pieces of scientific research around brain science that she often cites. And one is this study of London black cab drivers who have to study 2 to 4 years to learn 25,000 streets and 20,000 landmarks. And what scientists found is that this complex spatial training of the hippocampus of the taxi driver's brain had grown significantly. And they didn't know that this was possible before. So before studying these cab drivers, they didn't know that this could happen. And she says that these findings show that our brains can grow and adapt to change.
And interestingly, so just as a random aside, the test that those London cab drivers take, I always loved, it's called the knowledge.
That's literally right. That is the knowledge, right? And actually, that part of their brain shrinks when they are no longer in that job anymore. So the second piece of research also finds that our brains grow when we make mistakes. So we should be looking at those red marks on our children's papers as really a way to grow and for them to learn versus a way that's showing us essentially that they're no good at that subject, specifically math. And then there's research that shows the adverse effects of timed tests. And here is what Joe Bowler says about that.
We now know that if people are anxious, it actually shuts down part of the brain. The working memory is inhibited by anxiety. And we use the working memory when we work on math. So the schooling practices of time tests and other ways we put kids under time pressure are really bad for them mathematically.
Okay, so Tanya, but many tests that students take, including the SATs and some tests in class, are timed. I mean, the MCAS has recommended times, but it does give students additional time if needed.
That's right.
So what is Jo Bowler, what is she saying when she says we need to rethink the way we are testing students across the board?
So I'll tell you, this is part of her research that teachers feel most pushback around because they have all of these standards and frameworks that they have to abide by. And so when I was in Billerica, I talked with several teachers specifically about this. And what they told me essentially is that they're taking bits of her study and her research into their classrooms. But the fact is they have to teach students the ability and they have to use tests as a way to see if how their teaching actually works.
Okay. Tanya, stand by here for just a second. You're listening to Tanya Mosley. She's senior education reporter for WBUR's Edify, talking to us about changing mindsets around mathematics in Massachusetts schools. Hang in here for just a second because I want to bring in another guest. He's Matthew Bayronovan. Did I say that right? I got a thumbs up.
Perfect.
Okay. He's the K through 12 math coordinator for Chelmsford Public Schools. He teaches math education at UMass Lowell and at Fitchburg State University. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me here today.
Okay. So tell us, how are you trying to change math mindsets in Chelmsford?
Yes. My professional mission really is to increase students' interest and engagement in learning mathematics while also trying to build conceptual understanding. And the work that Tanya talked about of Joe Bowler and others, Carol Dweck, in the growth mindset really fits within my professional mission within Chelmsford and with all students within the United States. So I'm trying to promote growth mindset with the students within the Chelmsford Public Schools.
Okay, I want to play a little example of how you're trying to increase or engagement or make mathematical engagement more positive. Let's just listen to it.
I really want to know why kids don't seem to like it. It can be tough sometimes, but you keep on trying. So don't.
What is It's delightful. What is it?
So what we do within the Chelmsford Public Schools is we make these math music videos that are based upon popular songs that come out, and we change it to make it either about a mathematical concept or about a mission within mathematics, such as growth mindset or something about the importance of girls in STEM. So we write these songs with students, with teachers, with the local Chelmsford Public Access TV station. We record them in a studio that one of our teachers has at the high school, and then we make these fun math music videos about that to share within the district and outside of the district.
Okay, so but is that making then a difference with the actual math that students are learning? It's one thing to get them to make a fun music video, but is it translating into, you know, those phenomenal testing differences that Tanya was talking about in the small sample sizes that Joe Bowler was doing?
Well, there's a lot of different ways that I'm trying to attack this idea of getting students interested and engaged in learning mathematics. So one of them is these math music videos. The other thing that we're doing is a little bit more concrete based on what Joe Bowler does, is trying to work with the teachers to make them aware about growth mindset so they can help impart that knowledge to their students. And so that when they do make mistakes, they can realize, hey, that's actually a good thing. That's part of the learning process. process.
So tell me, how do you coach teachers to actually do that in the classroom?
So just like we ask our teachers to be able to teach things many different ways, I encourage the teachers, I share with them a lot of different strategies. There's the With Math I Can campaign, which is a nonprofit campaign about growth mindset. I share videos with them on that. There's different posters and activities
that
they can do.
Give me an example. Like say I was a third grade math teacher in Chelmsford, and I don't even know what kids do in third grade anymore. They're doing complicated.
Big part is multiplication and division.
Okay.
We begin understanding fractions in third grade. And so working with the teachers to share with them, okay, first thing, the idea about speed. Speed is not important within mathematics. We want to build conceptual understanding and not just procedural knowledge where we can be very quick. We want them to understand those math facts, but it's more important to take your time, persevere, problem-solving techniques. Take your time with it to get the correct answer. Also, if you do make a mistake, that's part of the learning process. If we say to the students there that if you make a mistake and that's a bad thing and it's a negative thing, then it's going to decrease their mindset.
Tanya, let me bring you back in here because, I mean, you've been reporting about this for quite some time. Obviously, Matthew is a curriculum coordinator working with teachers, but what about on the other end of sort of the educational ecosystem? Are administrators buying into this?
I talked with a couple of administrators at this Billerica conference, for instance, and they talked about imparting, being able to impart this growth mindset in the way that teachers are approaching. And it's different. Elementary, middle, and high school. It's very different. So you'll hear more of that in my piece tomorrow. But for elementary school teachers, a big issue is they're generalists. They have to teach all of the different subjects besides math. So there's a different approach there. And then in middle school, what they're finding is there's just a specific way that you're dealing with that population because they're a certain age and hormone levels and those things. So all of these kinds of things play in a part. It's not just saying, have a growth mindset. You can do better. It's also like these individual approaches that Matthew was talking about, the time issue. Also, having kids work in groups and talk out loud about the work that they're doing, not really penalizing mistakes. Those are just like a few things, but still along with that, really teaching them that you can actually get better based on these mistakes. So let's focus a little bit more on where you are with that.
If we look within the STEM field or even the STEAM field, science, technology, engineering, arts, students are authentically interested in learning about that. And then you have the mathematics where kids don't really enjoy learning that. So part of the work that we need to do is to focus on what happens in the classroom. Can we get organic, authentic conversations and activities and not just the rote memorization? Here, we're going to do 15 problems in class today. And then you know what the homework is? Do the exact same thing another 25 times. What are we really promoting? So part of it is the growth mindset with the students, and then part of it is with the way we approach the instruction of mathematics.
Can I just ask you, I mean, there was something that Tanya said at the beginning of the conversation that really stuck with me, that the fixed mindset may apply to mathematics, inadvertently, mathematical education more than almost any other subject. And I'm just wondering, why do you think that is?
So the idea of fixed mindset is really what society has caused us. As Tanya talked about in the beginning, a lot of people has a bad badge of courage. I can't do math. I hate math. How often do you see someone walking around proudly saying, I can't read or I don't know how to write? Very rarely. So our society really promotes this idea that it's cool or acceptable not to know how to do math or be able to do math. So we need to change that.
It makes a lot of sense to me that there is this movement to change attitudes around math in Massachusetts because the state has been pushing the STEM fields for a long time as well. I mean, in the older grades, is that part of the talking about changing the mindsets around math, that it's important, when you're talking to a teenager, it's important for your future?
Yeah. And part of it is that we want to show that you need it for your future. And part of it, we want to show that it can be applied to the, quote, real world. But part of it is that we also need to work to bring back the joy of mathematics, that mathematics can be applied, but actually it's just an absolutely beautiful subject that can be engaging in a way where students are asking questions themselves, coming up with their own solutions, multiple ways of doing the problems. And it is really an exciting field.
Tanya, this series is going on all week long, and I was wondering if you could just give us a preview to one of the one or two of the other stories that people will be able to listen to.
Yes. So tomorrow we're going to delve a little bit deeper into the idea of math mindsets by going into three different classrooms, the elementary, middle, and high, and some of the challenges and rewards of specifically teaching at those levels and using this concept. And then we're going to English high school. So several years ago, you might remember they had lower test scores, lower standardized test scores, math test scores. And then all of a sudden there was a huge jump. And the state wasn't sure if this was actually correct, if maybe there was some cheating going on. So they had to look at it again. So we're going to look at exactly what's happening at English High, why we saw this, and maybe what we can learn from what they're doing there. And then we're going to talk a bit about the idea of, is all this even worth it anyway? Specifically high-level math. Do we really need high-level math for every student that goes in high school beyond Algebra 1? There are some people who say no, and we're wasting our time. And it's the bottleneck that keeps those who are leaving high school versus those that are excelling and graduating.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that argument. Do we all need to know second order derivatives? I don't think so.
But then you're like an expert at math. Didn't you just say that?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed studying it a lot, but look where I ended up. But Matthew, let me ask you, there's a point that Tanya made a little earlier that I should have just come straight to you on, because it's a very, very important one. We can encourage a growth mindset in all the different ways that we've been talking about here regarding math as much as we want. But there's still, I'm just wondering how that abuts with the reality of things like testing. I mean, we have PARC now, or MCAS 2.0, whatever we're calling it, which is still a major part of education in Massachusetts. Can the two be combined in a fruitful way?
Well, you're absolutely correct that it's a challenge for two reasons. One, what you just talked about here is that we have these high-stake tests there that everybody's accountable for. And the second thing is the number of standards that teachers are required to cover over the course of the year. It does not allow the time to go into depth because you have to cover everything before these high-stakes tests in May. Having said that, we can do the best that we can to work within the parameters that we are given and we are constrained by, that we can still have joyful mathematics, meaningful mathematics, and have a growth mindset while we're learning it.
What can parents do to keep on encouraging that growth mindset at home?
That's a great question. So the first thing, it's important for parents to kind of understand the way the students are learning the math now. It's not the way they learned it 15, 20, or 30 years ago. So instead of having immediately going to the procedure, which oftentimes parents do, make sure you take a moment to understand the process that they're going through, the students, so that you can help them the way they learned it in class, because this is now what we consider to be the best practice.
I wonder if also maybe showing that like parents can still struggle with math and it's okay as long as they continue to want to engage with it and learn more.
Absolutely. Parents struggle with math. And you know what? Teachers make mistakes sometimes during the math class. And you know what? That's okay. We're all still learning. It's okay to make mistakes. Parents, you make mistakes. Work with your kids on it and keep a positive attitude. And that will translate to them doing well in the classroom.
Well, Matthew Bay-Ronavond is a K-12 math coordinator for Chelmsford Public Schools. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And Tanya Mosley, I know we've got to let you go because you're doing a special Facebook Live at WBUR's Facebook page about math and growth mindset.
That's right. We're talking with a first grade teacher about how it starts very early. And your last question, how parents can help in this process in building a growth mindset.
And that's going to be at 3:45.
That's right.
Okay, so that's at WBUR's Facebook page. Tanya, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to go out with another Chelmsford Math music video. This is Sokotoa style, based on Gangnam style, modified to help students to learn trigonometric functions. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
Sokotoa style. So, Sokotoa style.